confronted the man who was reportedly dressed as a security guard, the suspect identified as Markeith Lloyd, on the run after murdering his pregnant girlfriend in December. And the man accused of opening fire at a Florida airport has appeared in front of a judge, Esteban Santiago, given a public defender. USA Radio News.
Have you tried to grow your hair out and it just won't grow? That was me. It would never really grow further than my shoulders. And it was thin and yucky and it broke off. My brush was full of hair. Well, the solution for me was Ovation. It's the 3-bottle cell therapy system. And it's a unique breakthrough treatment that is found in no other hair care line. I have to be honest with you. My mom, who often cuts my hair, has never seen my hair my whole life get this long. Right, Mom? What is it like now?
It's a lot healthier looking and it feels differently. It's more silky. The consistency of the hair is a lot healthier.
All right, so money back guarantee, so you have really no risk. 94% of Ovation customers are like me. They would recommend Ovation cell therapy to a friend. So get the hair you've always wanted. Let it grow. Just go to ovationhair.com. And if you're a new customer, get a special introductory discount when you select Angie Austin Daybreak USA at checkout. Great hair, one click away at ovationhair.com. And remember, select Angie Austin Daybreak USA for the introductory discount. You won't regret trying this stuff. It is amazing. Ovationhair.com.
Pope Francis is coming out and challenging religious leaders around the world over killing in the name of God. Here's correspondent Chris Barnes.
Pope Francis is challenging all religious leaders to reject the idea that killing in the name of God can ever be justified. In an address to diplomats accredited to the Holy See, the Pope refers to terrorist attacks and says, quote, "We are dealing with a homicidal madness which misuses God's name in what he calls a play for domination and power." I'm Chris Barnes.
The man accused of shooting and wounding a U.S. diplomat in Guadalajara on Friday is now identified as a naturalized American who moved to Mexico in November from Phoenix. An official with the local prosecutor's office says 31-year-old Zafar Zia, who is originally from India, was taken into custody in a joint operation involving the FBI, DEA, and Jalisco state officials. He reportedly had a pistol tucked in his waistband. Zia is being sent back to the U.S., where his legal status will be determined. USA Radio News.
The U.S. economy has been getting stronger, and home values have been increasing. Hi, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans. Many of our clients have been taking cash out of their homes, a strategy that might work for you. The smart move is for you to refinance your mortgage right now with Quicken Loans. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.25%, APR 4.43%. Call 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
DNA has led to the arrest of several people in Paris in connection with the robbery of Kim Kardashian. Here's more on the story from Mark Mayfield.
As many as 16 people are under arrest in France in connection with the robbery of reality TV star Kim Kardashian. European news media report the arrests were made today in Paris and the south of France, and that DNA evidence helped link the suspects to the crime. Back in October, robbers burst into Kardashian's hotel room, tied her up at gunpoint, and stole $10 million worth of jewelry. Kardashian kept off her social media accounts after the robbery, finally returning to Twitter and Instagram last week when she posted pictures of her family.
Residents of the South who've been dealing with bitter cold and even snow in many locations are going to be going on a roller coaster ride. Randy Bell's in Mississippi.
After being in the deep freeze over the weekend, temperatures across the state will climb back close to normal later today. And that's just the beginning.
All the miserable cold we've had, we're going to be paid back for it with way above normal warmth.
Brad Bryan at the National Weather Service office in Jackson says by tomorrow, many locations will be in the 70s, a far cry from those lows in the teens that were common across Mississippi during the weekend. Tupelo and Greenwood both dropped down to 12 degrees Sunday morning. Jackson hit 17 for the second morning in a row. Randy Bell in Jackson.
While the South's warming up, a second storm expected to slam parts of Nevada and Northern California is causing flooding and mudslides in the wake of an earlier storm. Forecasters say the storm will be colder and move in tonight. USA Radio News.
Local weather this afternoon, partly sunny with a high near 27, southwest wind 5 to 8 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 12. South wind around 6 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tomorrow, a slight chance of snow between 2 p.m. and 4, then a slight chance of rain after 4 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 35. Calm wind becoming south 5 to 8 miles per hour in the morning. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Tuesday night, a chance of rain or freezing rain before 9 p.m., then rain, low around 34. South wind 8 to 11 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. Little or no ice accumulation expected. Wednesday, a slight chance of rain before 10 a.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 48. Southwest wind 7 to 9 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 20%.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is your National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff, work out of our houses, use our own phones, that sort of thing. And what we try to do is we try to help families and people who either have someone in their family or they know someone or work with someone or they themselves have a mental illness. And we do it in various ways. We teach classes. I teach, along with others, the family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course, and it helps people understand a little bit better what the person with the illness is going through. We talk about what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say. We also discuss medications, side effects, etc. And we try to let the people get a better understanding of what the loved one is going through or the person that they know or their neighbor, whoever it is. We also run support groups where families and people can come and vent or whatever, talk about what is going on in their life. And someone usually there has either done it, have gone through the same thing, or are going through the same thing, and they can, you know, give ideas and things that worked for them or may not worked or whatever. Everything we do is free. There is no charge. We also teach a basics class, which is for families who have younger children under the age of 17 who have maybe ADHD, which is now considered a mental illness, and also, you know, other issues and so on and so forth. If you would like to reach out and have a question and, you know, like some more information or something like that, our phone number is 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We do not man it 24 hours a day. We have no operator, but we do check it. We have someone that checks it at least twice a day, and we guarantee we will get back to you. And like I said, the number is 908-284-0500. Today, we're very privileged to have with us a special guest who is Carol Ricard. She's a licensed clinical social worker. Carol is a tobacco treatment specialist who has written over a dozen publications, conducted national training workshops on stress and wellness. Carol has also written, I think it's 9 books. Or you up a book? It's 9? Whoa, where have I been? What do you got, 11 now?
Yep, 12.
12, that's even more. So Carol's written 12 books, and she's a popular speaker and trainer at all types of conferences, events, etc. And she's also the founder and CEO of Wellness YOU University, LLC, which is a global health education and training company. It's dedicated to empowering people with the tools and support to achieve lifelong wellness. Carol is also someone who I consider a very good friend. And welcome, Carol.
Thank you. I consider you the same.
Well, thank you. Not everybody does, so I appreciate it. What are you laughing at, Tracy?
I plead the fifth.
Yeah, you're invoking your right to silence, huh? This is a talk show, Tracy. You can talk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Six?
Yeah.
It'd be a long
Seventh?
Show.
Exactly. Carol, are you still on the board at the Trenton Hospital that's dealing with parity?
I'm still working with the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance, yes, around parity. Even though that's yet kind of remains to be seen what happens.
Well, how's it going? I mean, is it making any progress?
We've made some progress, and in fact, the 21st Century Cures Act that passed in December and the President signed, there's some really good stuff in there that strengthens parity. But the other thing that kind of remains to be seen is what happens with the Affordable Care Act, because what happened in the past with our parity law, and it basically says our physical, our mental health are all treated equally, in the past, companies just didn't offer mental health benefits.
Right.
And that was kind of how they got around the whole issue.
Right,
the
right.
Affordable Care Act came along and it said you have to offer as an essential benefit mental health. So there's a lot of uncertainty out there that, you know, I'm really not quite sure. But the parity law itself still exists. 2008, that law was passed. And what they did in this more recent legislation is kind of some good stuff. It creates some accountability, so on a federal level.
Right.
So.
And I know you were at the last mental health board meeting, and they were talking about fees for service.
Yes.
That could be disastrous.
Yeah.
I feel. Now, I'm not that knowledgeable about the whole thing, but just the phrase of it itself is enough to make you wonder. You know, fees for service. Did anybody ever look around and see how many people with mental health issues don't have jobs and, you know, can't afford to pay anything, and they're talking about fees for service? I'm sorry, I don't buy it. And how many companies, quote unquote, organizations, whatever you want to call it, are going to take fees for service, or rather just say, forget it. We'll do something else. Because look right now, how many people don't take Medicare,
right.
Medicare, you know, or insurance, you know. So a lot of people don't take insurance either. You know, you file your insurance claim and then you get the money back, but you pay the provider. So, you know, it just seems to me that we're making it more and more and more difficult for people with problems to get the help they need.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when you think of the organizations that have been providing the care and the treatment to a lot of people who haven't had insurance or have Medicaid, that's a lot of service being provided. And the fee for service is really kind of tricky because, you know, there's a lot of service that's provided that you can't account for in a code. So if I'm a case manager and you're my client and I come to your house to pick you up to take you to Social Security, guess what? What if that's going to be covered by fee for service? And from what I've understood, there's a lot that agencies have done in the past that doesn't get reimbursed under
right.
fee for service.
And right.
So this is federal or state?
State. Yeah. It's state and it's you know, really the Medicaid.
Okay. Right.
Which the rates that they were getting paid wasn't so great to begin with, but at least, again, we were kind of capturing services that are really critical to keeping people well and out of the hospital that don't fall neatly into a little code or what gets reimbursed. And
you know, it's not only medication. You know, all organizations, NAMI included, want to get people to either take their meds, go get a job, or go look for, you know, work, find a place to live, you know, become more independent and more a part of society. And yet, when a person gets a job, and I know from I want to go into it, but my own experience, put it that way. They get a job, and all of a sudden they raise their rent.
Right. There's.
And then if they get a raise, God forbid they get a raise, because then they raise their rent even more. And it's like, here's somebody who'd be better off not getting a job. Would have been better off just staying home. Collecting SSI, collecting his, you know, unemployment, well, whatever, you know, thing. And, you know, go on his merry way. But we want them to go get jobs. We want them to become part of society. We want them to be accepted into the workforce and all this. And then in one hand, we're, oh, yeah, helping them do this. And in the other hand, we're taking it back. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And, I mean, we don't do this with cancer. We don't do it with, you know, diabetes or whatever other terminal illnesses there are. But, you know, it's like it just drives me crazy. And not only because it's my son, it's but it's anybody.
It's anybody.
It's just anybody, you know.
Yeah, I've worked with lots of patients over the years who, you know what, got well, got back to work, and the minute they got back to work, they, you know, ended up losing their Social Security benefits. And yet what they were working wasn't enough necessarily to recover what their expenses were. But more importantly, they would lose their insurance when they lost those Social Security benefits.
Mm-hmm.
To say, I mean, that's the thing to me, I'll be honest, I get really nervous about the Affordable Care. I know it's not a great kind of like plan, but I have seen it serve so many more people who otherwise wouldn't have access to mental health treatment. And so it allows those people to have access to not just mental health, but physical health as well.
Right, exactly.
And that, I have to say, I think that's kind of one of the biggest things for me, that the unknowns that I just kind of say my silent, you know, prayers and thoughts for, because it's hard enough getting well, you know.
Sure.
An illness that wants to keep you sick,
you know. You know, and it's hard enough getting someone to find the right medication that works for them.
Yeah.
Or a combination thereof. Getting to take the medication, right? Getting them to feel confident enough to go ask for a job or go out and look for a job. Filling out resumes and going on interviews and all that good happy stuff.
Steps.
I'm sorry?
Those are all big steps.
Exactly. And, you know, and here people are doing it, and then, excuse me, but then they're getting screwed.
Yeah.
And in many cases, most cases that I've dealt with over the last 20 years, they'd be better off, in plain English, if they stayed unemployed and stayed on the benefits that they get. They'd make more. They'd have more spending money.
Yeah, it's definitely a messed up system.
It is, and it doesn't seem like we're anybody. I don't care how good some of the politicians are or whatever. It doesn't seem like anybody's trying to fix it.
Yeah.
And they're only trying to make it worse. You know? And I understand that there's physicians, psychiatrists, psychologists, who aren't getting paid what they would get paid if they dealt with a normal isn't the right word, but
insured person.
An insured person or, you know, some other category of patient.
Well, even mental health, even clinicians. So you talk about psychiatrists. I mean, that's where the system even starts to break down, because you can take a psychiatrist who spends 2 hours working on a report for like an elder person, a senior, you know, a senior kind of report, and they get, you know, let's say $90, where you take an ophthalmologist or some other kind of medical person, they write that same, spend the same 2 hours, guess what they're getting reimbursed, $260. So it's this whole discrepancy around the difference between mental health and physical health, and, you know, and to me, until we kind of just continue to start treating the person,
absolutely.
You know, that we're going to move and getting anywhere.
Right.
And that means the whole person. That means their kind of relationships, their physical health, their mental health, their financial kind of health, all these pieces that make us a whole person.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's long overdue, but it's, you know, not around there yet either, you know.
Not around the corner.
No, not yet, you know. But you wrote a book a while back, I guess now, called the Caregiver's Toolbox.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
You know, how to manage stress.
Yep.
Would you explain that book? Because I found it interesting. Because I don't think personally a lot of people realize how much stress a caregiver is under, who's taking care of someone, whether it's physically disabled or mentally disabled or just old age and,
caregiver,
you know, Alzheimer's or whatever. It's just a caregiver in general. And I don't think, you know, a lot of people don't understand the stress that those people are under. You know, a lot of times they don't know what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say, you know. And they may not understand totally what their loved one is going through.
Right.
You know, and that's a big part right there. They may not understand what their loved one is going through. You know, so if you would just explain it a little bit and what inspired you to write it.
Well, that's kind of interesting. What inspired me to write it was going to NAMI's Caregivers Conference last spring. And it was a great conference, and the woman I remember was just pretty phenomenal, pretty motivating. But I don't know, for me, I've spent 25 years working in hospitals, giving people tools to live well. And I just wanted to, I felt like you could walk away from there, but you didn't have something you could put your hands on. So, and then it got me to think about this. I actually started being a professional caregiver at age 14. My dad had died, and my mom got really sick. And I ended up becoming one of those parentified kids, you know, where I kind of took care of my mom. And I have to be honest with you, it happened so many years ago, I blocked it completely out of my mind until this conference. And I realized that, you know, wow, that was a part of my life back then. And I think the thing about being a caregiver, it's kind of like one of those cards that you get dealt in life. You know, you don't get a choice.
Yeah.
Right.
No. And the best way I like to get people to think about it is if you took a bottle of soda, and you had it closed really tight, but you started shaking it up, all of that pressure that builds up on the inside, that's what happens to people who are caregivers. Some more than others. You know,
right.
It's like you drop it down 2-3 flights of stairs. Some people. But the thing about it is it doesn't really kind of matter how much help you might have, what you can do, your life has changed. And that, to me, is really the important part is I can't take away the Alzheimer's. I can't take away the financial stressors that you have. And so, for me, I titled it A Toolbox for Reducing and Managing Stress because it's going to be there. It's constantly going to be there. And what happens is caregivers are at the highest risk of the stress impacting their physical and their mental well-being, you know, most likely to then go on to become physically sick themselves because of that,
yeah.
That kind of stress.
Need their own caregiver.
Yeah.
Next. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that sometimes not knowing what, you know, somebody is going through is hard. And I always say, don't think for other people. You know, ask. I got to the point where I got so good at doing everything by myself that I actually didn't ask anybody for help. And I think that's, if I could go back and I could undo one thing, that's one thing I would encourage people to do is ask for help, or even if you don't ask for it, when people offer it, take it.
Take it, yeah.
You know, take it. And it's not that you can't do it, but it really is just, you know what, your life can become a little bit easier by just taking that little break. Because I think that's the other thing about it. When you're a caregiver, that stress is with you 24 hours a day, you know. And sometimes we got to find ways to just take a little break from it. Doesn't necessarily mean life is changing or going away, but I got to tell you, that little break, even if it's just 60 seconds, you know, to duck. But, and moms know this, you know, I've had many patients, my dogs don't count, but they say, you know what, I got to duck in the bathroom for just 2 minutes. you know, just any way you can do to kind of put that oxygen mask on yourself first is so critical.
It is, and a lot of times caregivers get so frustrated because they're dealing with someone and they're trying to explain something to someone, and they're explaining it, and they're explaining it over and over and over and over again.
Yep.
And the person just goes and does it again, you know.
Yeah.
It's just.
And you know what? I was recently in Florida, you know, and actually father-in-law's, and he's having some difficulties. And I remember I messed up his routine. I brought the paper in, and he was going to get the paper. I got it. Again, I had to say I got the paper 5 times, Larry, because he couldn't remember that I got the paper. You know, and you can't take it personally. It gets frustrated, but think of it as just kind of the need to be a broken wheel. You know, and it gets exhausting, which is why you got to figure out ways to create those breaks for yourself too. Because you can't approach that person the same way as you would say another person.
Right.
And no, you're going to say it 10 times. Is what I always like to say.
Yep. And then you may have to say it 10 more times after that. You know?
And I think it also speaks to the real importance of having support around. And Lord knows that's what NAMI does for families and friends and individuals. But I think also being around other people that can speak the same language is really important. And if you can't get to a support group, at least using the internet, using ways that we can now to not feel so alone in that frustration.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
It doesn't change the frustration, but
no.
At least you don't feel alone with it. And you can feel like, oh, okay, good. Other people understand what I'm
Yeah, you don't have to go through it alone.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Tracy, you were going to say something, I think, were you? No? Okay.
Well, I was, you know, thinking of your shaken bottle metaphor. It's kind of like little release valves or something so that it doesn't all explode at once. And whenever I've been to, because, well, I have a relative who has a problem. I'm not a caregiver. He does live on his own. But whenever I've been to any of the NAMI support meetings, I'm just amazed at what people who have someone living with them go through, and I've been through that too, and it's just horror stories, which no one can really understand.
Yeah, it's and the whole thing about the soda bottle, which I've used for years, you know, in the hospital, because I think it illustrates it so well. You can't try to slowly time it, because guess what happens? It still explodes. So the goal I always teach people is, it's why you take 1 minute is. Just a teeny little bit at a time,
mm-hmm.
You know. Because what ends up happening, believe it or not, is I have 2 soda bottles at home I've done with my workshops. I've never opened them. I have people shake them, but I've never opened them. And guess what's happened? They've started to concave in on themselves. It's kind of the coolest thing, you know, because that pressure is just not gone anywhere. And so what happens is the bottles become deformed because it's kind of pulling in the plastic. And not everybody explodes.
They implode.
Implode. And that's the danger with stress. That's the danger with caregiver stress, is that explosion or implosion.
Right.
And quite honestly, I could understand how people explode too, because the situation you described where you're telling somebody the same thing 12 times, that frustration just starts to build and... That's where sometimes people can, the anger, can the frustration come down on the wrong people, quite honestly.
Exactly.
That's the reason why we have to take action to at least create little releases.
And I, when I support groups, I say that to people, you know, if you're not healthy, you can't take care of your loved one.
Yeah.
So you have to stay healthy. So whether it's taking the dog for a walk around a block or... reading a chapter in a book or sitting on your deck and looking at the stars or, you know, whatever you can do for, and it depends, the time frame varies.
Right.
In some cases it could be a half hour. In some cases it could be, you know, 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
But depending on what it is, use it and use it as often as you can.
Yeah.
You know,
and well, you know what? In 25 years, I've really kind of learned, too, though, is that it's really a two-step process. One, you got to stop the level from rising. So if I have that bottle, I got to stop shaking the bottle. That's what I call, in my book, I talk about doing something that's passive. And you described a couple of them. Go look at the stars, you know, kind of take a breath, listening to some music. But once the pressure gets in the bottle, you've got to do something active to release it, which means it requires energy. So believe it or not, cleaning or, you know, taking and just punching a pillow or anything that requires energy to be discharged. So you want to do both. You want to do something. So when you start to feel that level rising, you got to do something to stop, you know. And then what you want to do is something to kind of release it. The other analogy or metaphor or whatever is the visual is a tub of water, like a bathtub. You turn the water on, and eventually the tub will overflow.
Right.
You can turn the water off, but who's to say that next day somebody doesn't come along and turn it on you again, and you still got overflow? So that two-step process, what you described, in my mind, Larry, what you described, what you tell people, I think of that as self-care.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Those self-cares. And I think people got to do both. You got to take care of yourself, but then you also have to purposely manage the stress, the pressure that comes up inside of you.
Yeah, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of your loved one or whoever you're caring for.
Mask, you know, or those are
right.
Kind of interesting. I'm working on a new book right now. In fact, that's where I was at home. And it's called Selfness.
What is it?
It's called Selfness.
Okay.
I like that.
And the subtitle is, you know, Simple Self-Care Secrets for Those Who Care for Others. And the idea of it was that this selfness we have to practice. And what happened was I had a woman one time in the group therapy many years ago. I said to her, what are you going to do for yourself tonight? And she's like, I got to feed the kids. I got to bathe them. I don't have time. And I said, well, what's one thing you could fit into there? And she said, nope, couldn't do it. So I gave the oxygen mask because we use that a lot in our women's programs. You got to put the mask on yourself first and then your kids. She's like, I couldn't do it. I put it on myself, kids, like that. I said, why not? And she said, that'd be selfish. And I remember thinking real quick, all right, Carol, come up with something. Because that, I said, no, that's being selfless. That selfish is when we want other people to do what we want. Selfness is when you are taking care of yourselves first to be there to take care of other people. And there's a subtle difference there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do not practice selfness, you will not be there to take care of whoever it is that you got to take care of.
Right.
And that to me, so I think of them as both. We're taking care of the self and we're also taking care of the stress. And caregivers have to do both.
It's true.
No mm-hmm. other critical things to do than those two kinds of pieces right there.
That's right. How do you guide people to access proper treatment? I know that you help people, and if you talk to someone and you feel that they need X treatment, how do you get them to access that?
Well, that's a really interesting question, Larry, because I was thinking about this other book I wanted to write on how to help the people who don't want help.
That's a good one.
Okay. There's a lot of people that don't want help.
Can you?
And as a family member, you know, or a friend, and it's interesting because I did Ask the Social Worker night down at a DBSA group in Colts Neck, and we had 15 family members and friends come. And I kind of said, all right, well, what do you want to walk out of here with? And honestly, that was one of the biggest questions was, well, how do you help somebody who doesn't want help?
Right.
And the thing about that is that the more you tell somebody what they need, the more they're not going to hear what it is you have to say to them. No, and I think it's kind of just guiding them and kind of helping them see that what they're doing may not be working so much right now. I remember I had one mom who said, well, how can I help my daughter? You know, she doesn't want to go to, you know, she doesn't want treatment. She doesn't want to go to her doctor anymore. And I said, well, the one thing you can do is start keeping track of how many days she doesn't come out of the bedroom on a calendar. Just every day, mark it down, because what we can do, we can at least help people visualize the behaviors. I think that's one of the other really important things. You know, because in all the years I've done treatment, I could not tell anybody what they need to do.
No.
I will never, ever tell somebody what they need to do. The question is, can I help them discover what might help them? And not the same thing's going to work for everybody. I think that's the other really, really big point, is that not everything works the same for everybody.
No, and it's the same thing like with medications. You know, aspirin may work for you and it doesn't work for me, or vice versa. And, you know, 100 other medications could work for everybody but me or you or whatever, you know. So it's – and that's what makes it difficult too, because the doctors are going to what has worked for the biggest majority of people over the years. And it may not work. But it may take 2 months to find out, or 3 months to find out that it didn't work or isn't working. And then you're in another bind. Now we try something else. Oh, we mix that with this. And, you know, and it's all this, you know, cocktail combinations that they come up with. And, yeah, some of them work great, these combinations. They do. But it's the process of getting there and getting that person to continue to want to do it. Because after a while, they say, oh, to hell with it. You know, I don't want to do it anymore, you know.
Well, that's right. That's one of the reasons.
Right.
Right. The people who will not accept help, that's one of the main reasons right from the start. I don't want to be a guinea pig.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I am a PLW, 25 years, person living well with clinical depression. You know, and for me, the first couple medicines that I tried didn't work, but because I was working in a mental health hospital, I knew people got well, you know, so it was just a matter of that. I always joke and say my recovery happened inside out, because I was hospitalized just to go to work, you know. But if I'd never been hospitalized, I would have kept racking up all these medical bills, because I had about $4,000 or $5,000, because we were trying to figure out what was going on. So I just lost my train of thought. Right. It'll come back to me. But I knew that people could get well, you know,
right.
And I think that's the other really important piece of it, that not to give up hope, because that we really kind of can do that. And medicine is just one of those tools that we have to use. There's still those other things, and you mentioned several of them at the beginning. Work, a sense
right.
of purpose, you know, kind of support. We've kind of talked about all those different things that really for anybody.
You know, it's ironic that you had mentioned, you know, a woman talking about her daughter not getting out of bed. I had somebody call me a while ago now, last year sometime. And that's exactly what she said. My daughter won't get out of bed. I beat on the door. She won't get out of bed. And I, not being quote unquote professional, I says, well, what would you like her to do if she got out of bed? Well, get up, take a shower, get dressed. I said, okay, let's just say she did that. Then what would you want to do? Come downstairs and have breakfast. I said, all right, that makes sense. Then what? Well, maybe take the dog out for a walk. Okay. And look for a job. I said, all right, I tell you what. Since you called me, you're asking for my opinion. Correct? She says, well, yeah. I says, don't do anything. Don't do anything. Don't knock on her door. Don't tell her breakfast is ready. Don't do anything. Nothing? No. See what happens. I want to say about 4 days later, she called me up. She says, my daughter got out of bed. Really? And what'd she do when she got out of bed? Well, she got dressed and she showered and she got dressed. And she came downstairs and ate breakfast. And I said, well, what's she doing now? She says, well, she's taking the dog for a walk. I says, you know, it's not that your daughter didn't want to get out of bed. I says, your daughter couldn't get out of bed. And I says, I mean, literally could not get out of bed.
Yep.
She was physically, mentally stuck in that bed.
I call it quicksand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good word for it. Right. Yeah. But she was stuck there. It's not that she didn't want to get up. It's not that she didn't want to take a shower, get dressed, have breakfast, and go take the dog out, or even look for a job. She couldn't. And by beating on the door and, you know, berating her to get out of bed and everything, you weren't helping the situation. By backing off,
yep.
It came to a point where she could get out of bed, and she did. Oh, she said, if I have another problem, I'll call you up. You got my number.
What it is, what you just described, Larry, I think is so important, is that you really kind of have to start where the person is.
Yeah.
You know? And if that person is thinking, I don't have a problem, then that's where you got to join them. You know, even though you can see that it's the problem for them, that's where you kind of join them. Because when you're pushing them, our natural instinct is to push back.
Right.
However, if you're joining them, then that's a little bit different. You know, and I have to tell you, that was the most fun I had done in a workshop. And I couldn't remember how long. And the feedback from the family members was, I realized that there's this great need. So actually, I'm going to try in February, March, and April with Nami Mercer, we're going to do an Ask the Social Worker call so that anybody could call me, you know, with any questions that they have, so that this way I can kind of just help them, you know.
Right.
What I can't help, at least I can learn and find out about. But I find that there's that information that if they don't get to NAMI, you know, and there's not really a lot of other places to go to get it, how do people do that? And I mean, it was pretty phenomenal. I mean, I ended up getting candles somebody sent me, and then another lady. But I think people are hungry for that information. What do? You know, and she was just lucky to have gotten you, who gave her some really great feedback.
Well, it's just like I'm talking from...
Well, partly because you experienced it, too.
I'm talking from experience,
yes,
too,
you know. Yeah.
And learning and screwing it up and,
I call that trial and error.
Yeah, well, it's trial and error, but I screwed it up,
But it's so true. I mean, and if you have somebody that doesn't want help, telling them they need help isn't going to help.
Right.
So what is a first step that someone could do? You say accept it, or how would you communicate with that person then?
Well,
change your communication.
I think one of the ways you kind of change your communication is this, and say, listen, I'd say, Larry, you know what? I'm concerned and just want to let you know that I'm here if you need me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and if you say concerned, you can be very factual. You could say, Larry, I'm concerned because for the last 4 days, you haven't come out of your room. And leave it at that.
Right.
So it doesn't sound judgmental. It sounds more like you're describing something.
Yes.
You're detached.
The visual way is to say that you're putting it on the table and you're not shoving it at the person.
Right.
Think of setting a plate on the table. You know, you could shove that bowl, you know, of mashed potatoes in somebody's direction, or you could just kind of set it there for them
to reach for it.
Be able to reach for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I think that that
That's
is
beautiful.
And, and it comes back to what there are the stages of change, which is another workshop that I've done for some agencies.
Right.
And that is this. You can't talk to somebody about a problem when they don't see the problem.
Right.
And I came up with the river change. You can't talk to somebody about the river when there's a mountain range that is between them
and the river. Right.
Because the river to them does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what was so funny about it was I did this for Catholic Charities, and after I took my, because it's, again, making it visual. So I have a box of 7,000 M&Ms that I use to help people understand all the compounds that are in cigarette smoke. And yes, I have counted every single one of them, I'm proud to say. Took me a while, but so I unveiled this as one of my tools that I'll use with my patients. And afterwards, I had a lady come up to me, she's like, one of their staff, is there really 7,000 compounds in a puff of smoke? And I said, no, there's 7,000 compounds in smoke itself. So whether you puff it or I just inhale it. Oh, I think I got some stuff to work on. And again, she didn't come into that workshop thinking about quitting smoking.
Right.
But because she saw those 7,000 M&Ms, it just helped highlight a kind of a point for her. And I think that's what we have to do with people who we see want help, but they don't think they need help.
Right.
You know, it's just find ways to let them know that you're there to support them.
Great.
You know, like you kind of helped that woman do, just mm-hmm. be there.
And, you know, sometimes you, I know a relative of mine who would pack everything he owned when he'd go to get the link because he was afraid somebody else would take it, you know. And this used to just, you know, boggle my mind. And then one day I said, gee, did you forget anything? Did you forget the pen? You might want to take that with you, you know. And truthfully, I was being a wise ass in plain English, okay?
Well, you didn't hear the wise ass part.
But it struck something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he took the pen. But then over the next couple of days, he would leave stuff there, not take everything.
Yeah. Interesting.
And, you know, so it just...
That's fascinating.
And that kind of makes a little sense to me, too, though, because you kind of understood what he was feeling or worried about. And so you kind of validated. I think that's the other thing that's really critical to me is validate somebody. You know, you don't have to validate things you don't agree with.
No.
All right?
Or things that are wrong or whatever, but you know.
But recognizing things that are important to them. And what you recognized was his belongings were important to him, you know. And
but I was being,
I know
the first time, you know, But then it dawned on me that, hey, you know, this could mean something, you know.
Well, you established a relationship.
You know,
I think that you can have a relationship, too. And that's the other really important part if you want to help people get help, you know, is that you have that with them.
All right. We had mentioned, or Tracy had mentioned earlier about, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
And how do you think she helped break the stigma of mental illness?
So I was sharing, you know, with the two of you, I write for Esperanza magazine, which is a magazine for people with depression and anxiety, and BP is the magazine for people with bipolar.
I get them both.
Yeah. And, you know, and my writing is every week on their website. I write their blog for them. And when they came out with the first issue, and I forget it, was at least like 15 years ago or so, Carrie Fisher was the cover. She was the person that would win first, being, you know, kind of having her face on the cover of a magazine for bipolar. I can't think of words to describe what she has done for people living with mental, you know, illness. And kind of what I followed after her death, how many other people had kind of gone on their Twitter. You know, and I don't Twitter.
No, I don't, I don't either.
But I remembered reading some articles where other people, you know, kind of felt like, came, for no better word, the coming out.
and
the person living with a mental
it's
illness.
Safe right. Now.
You know,
yeah.
And
I think the more people like her who come out and admit it or talk about it, it just helps break that stigma that's attached to it.
It does.
You know, like Bruce Springsteen came out and said he suffers from depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, who would have thought? Here's a guy that, you know, born and raised in Jersey and, you know, multi-billionaire, and, you know, and he suffers from depression, you know.
Well, it's because we know them in a sense. You know, we don't know them personally.
No, but we know them. Right.
And that's the thing with any stigma, is creating that personal kind of connection to people. You know, Bruce Springsteen, just the number of people, but I also think it gives so many people hope.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. Someone's accomplished so much.
Your life doesn't come to an end. You know, it actually, people's lives have opened up when they finally got correctly diagnosed.
Right. I say to people, you know, like when we do these presentations we were talking about earlier that we did, like the one we did today, we usually put two big screens up of all famous people, you know. And it's, some of them have passed on, but a lot of them are still around. And, you know, you look at the names and, you know, I always emphasize Buzz Aldrin, because he just amazes me that he walked on the moon and was an astronaut and suffers from severe depression. You know?
And he's also a man, because I think even men have it harder, you know, than ladies do. Like Terry Bradshaw. The fact that Terry Bradshaw.
And he came out long time ago. You know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, people like that, I mean, what I say to people is that just because you have an illness, you can go on with your life. You may not go back to college. You may not become an astronaut and walk on the moon, but you can live a full life, you know, and you don't have to let this hold you back,
right?
You know.
You said an important word, though, Larry. You said just because you have this illness, and I think sometimes what happens, in, at least in my work in 25 years of hospital treatment settings working there, was people become their illness.
Yeah.
And they say, I am bipolar. And I would always correct people on this. They say, excuse me, you are not your illness. You have bipolar disorder. You have anxiety disorder. But you are not your bipolar. And you are not anxiety. And I think that's a very important point, because when you feel like you are your illness, then you kind of don't see those possibilities that you just described.
Right.
When you're a person living with an illness, it's only a part of who you are. It doesn't have to be all that you are.
Right.
And that, to me, too, is such an incredible, important message that I think, you know, Carrie Fisher and individuals like that have spoken about.
Demi Lovato.
Jane Pauley.
Yeah, Demi Lovato used to think it was normal to stay up 4 nights and 5 nights and write songs all night. She'd write at least 5 songs a night and thought it was totally normal, you know.
Yeah. And when I was on Dr. Oz, I got to speak to Maurice Bernard.
Yep, I remember that.
And Maurice is Sonny on General Hospital. And his bipolar disorder. And what I loved, if you haven't seen that, Google Dr. Oz and Maurice Bernard, because it really is the best mental health talk show I've seen. And one of the questions Dr. Oz asked him, so, do you think your medication, you know, like it's kind of dulled your creativity? Because a lot of people, you know, with bipolar disorder, and they kind of get like that manic, hypomanic, they get very much more creative. Do you think it's hurt your creativity? And I love that he was able to say, Maurice said, no, actually, I think it's helped. I think I've done some of my best work, you know, in the last couple of years, but I've only been able to do that because I've been well.
Yeah. I think the more people like them who come out and talk about it, you know, like Demi Lovato goes to all the national conventions of NAMI now and talks to it and everything, and she's been a great help, Carrie Fisher, you know.
You know what's important about Demi Lovato, though? Is her age.
It is.
I think she speaks to a whole different generation.
Yep, she does.
And if we can help younger folks grow up not having the same stigma, you know, that some of the older folks have kind of had to deal with.
Well, like even Billy Joel.
Yeah.
You know, he's only come out of the last couple of years, but he is very successful and still is. And, you know, sells out wherever he plays, you know. So, but like I tell people, and I'm sure you do also, that you may not be as famous personality, and you may not even go back to college, you know, but you may have a job that you enjoy and, you know, and a life.
And be well.
And that's what more important than anything, you know. And We've got about a minute and a half left.
A minute and a half.
Yeah.
Wow.
If someone wanted to reach out to you, Carol, either email, phone, website, how would they do that?
Well, I tell you what, easiest is probably phone.
Okay.
Because it's easy to remember. It's 888 and then the word Light Tools. So if you use your phone, just remember Light Tools. You got
888 Life Tools.
Yep. And then probably email would be the next, which would be Carol at WELLYOU, NIVERSITY, University.com. So that's.
Do that one again?
Well, you university.
Yes, YOU.
YOU, yep. So it's well and university, just add a Y and a O to make it be you.
Well, I can't tell you how happy I am that you came.
Well, I'm so glad to
be here. Yes, thank you, Carol.
Really, you know, and you know you're coming back.
Oh,
you know.
Anytime.
There's, I'm really looking forward to your book for the, I'm not going to say the deniers, but the people who don't think they're there.
How to help those who don't want
ill. Them. Yeah, how to help. I think that'll be extremely important.
Yes, I think so also.
Yeah.
And I wasn't. I'm sorry. I didn't realize
well,
I
you
cut
know,
up with all your books.
It's the tools in my head. You
yeah.
Know, so. I honestly think the more people, the more tools that people have, the more we can help people
yep.
be well, and the more people can be well.
Right, exactly. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters, and we will be off next week due to the chamber closing for Martin Luther King's birthday. And also, it's the 16th, and it's my 52nd wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah, woo is right. Yeah, whoa. I was only 20 when I got married, so you figure it out. You know? but we will see you in 2 weeks. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. Take care now.
Okay, thank you.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
We will be replacing it rapidly after repealing it.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Face the Nation speaking about the repeal of Obamacare.
The status quo is simply unacceptable, and at the risk of being repetitious, if Hillary Clinton had been elected, we'd be revisiting Obamacare.
The hunt for a cop killer in Florida has gotten even more tragic. A second police officer is dead, involved in a traffic accident while trying to track down Mariketh Lloyd, who shot and killed a police sergeant at a Walmart this morning. The suspect reportedly holed up in an apartment complex. SWAT teams have locked the location down. President Obama warning Donald Trump to be careful about what he says on Twitter.
The day that he is the president of the United States, there are world capitals and financial markets and people all around the world who take really seriously what he says.
USA Radio News.
If you have ever had an email account, shopped online, or used a credit card to make purchases, you are in dire jeopardy of identity theft. You must protect yourself now. Call our partner, ID Lion, at 1-800-941-6844 and sign up now for free. That's right, free. USA Radio Networks and ID Lion want everyone to have identity theft coverage. If you sign up now, we will give you a $50 gift card. Identity theft destroys credit and causes horrible issues for those that are hacked. Don't be a victim. Take advantage of this incredible free offer and sign up now. Call 1-800-941-6844.